This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, this is Carlos on the phone and jumping into the car.
Thanks, Carlos.
So this is Laureen, and this like sounds like a terrible connection. Are you guys getting a lot of unpleasant sound on your end?
Yeah, it sounds like somebody's shuffling cards in the background behind you.
Oh, that's weird. Oh, maybe
comes,
I should.
It comes and goes. It's good. It's fine now.
No, but it's starting again. Should I hang up and try and reconnect?
If you don't mind, Maureen, I think that would probably be helpful.
Okay, I will do that. I will note just that the agenda is not up to date. Jean-Baptiste had sent around a revised agenda that swapped out the RPMs because David wasn't going to be able to present that today, so that should be adjusted.
Okay.
Should we all reconnect? Sorry, Laureen, for interrupting.
No, just Laureen.
I'm going to hang up and reconnect.
Thank you.
Laureen, do we have you back?
I'm back. Hopefully this sounds
better. Much better, Laureen. Thank you.
Oh, good.
Much better. Thank
much
you.
Better.
Much better.
Well, I think we probably have critical mass, so why don't we go ahead and get started.
Can I ask one silly technical question? If I were only on the computer and I wanted to mute my microphone, how would I do that?
There's a little button up at the top of your screen that's a picture of a microphone. If you click it, it'll cross out the microphone and you'll know you're muted.
See, that's where I'm having trouble finding that button. I know there's a microphone next to my name.
No, up in the upper left-hand corner of the overall screen, next to where it says ICANN and meeting.
Okay, so that's the speed. That would mute my speakers. That would also mute my microphone?
No. Next to the speakers should be a picture of a microphone.
Oh, I guess since I'm on the phone, it has...
Right. If you can do a drop-down list and say, connect my microphone.
Got it. Okay. I think because I'm on the phone, it's giving me a phone icon. But if I wasn't on the phone, it would give me a mic icon, I see.
That's right.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Pamela, I guess now you can unpause the recording.
Okay, hold on just one moment. Let me get over to the right screen. My computer has not had its coffee yet. And recording resumed.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the 31st plenary call of the CCT review team. Is there anyone on the phone that is not in the Adobe Connect? And is there anyone that has an update to their statement of interest? Besides Jamie, I guess, right? Have you updated your statement of interest, Jamie?
I have not, and actually I didn't think about it didn't occur to me that I should do that, but I will go back and do that. I mean, I'm still an ICANN employee, which is a material thing, but I do have
right. No, I know. I didn't know whether ICANN employees even did them. I was half-joking, but I guess your status has changed in a way that's relevant to the review team, so it's probably worth updating it.
Yep, sorry. Will do.
No problem. So we've got Lorene on a good connection, and the first thing on the agenda is to go through the consumer trust document. Anything that's worthy of discussion, I'll let Lorene pick and choose with emphasis on the recommendations. Lorene, go ahead and take it away.
Sure. And Jean-Baptiste, I had sent around a new version yesterday afternoon, and this is not the new version. So I would like the newest version up.
Lorene, this is the same version. Is that it's just that when you sent it, you have removed all the markups, and if I export it, I will get this as a version, but I can try again.
Oh, okay, I guess I'm a little confused.
Just 1 second, I would try again.
Okay. So while we're waiting for that, I'll raise a couple of general issues. The first is Stan has raised a concern about how we refer to the surveys, and I raise this as a global point. Because he was concerned about he was concerned about our terminology. He didn't like the terminology ICANN global, either consumer end user survey or global registrant survey, because he felt it made it sound like ICANN did the survey as opposed to Nielsen. And I know Aliza had commented that she wasn't sure people would even know what Nielsen was. So I raise it as an issue because we should figure out how we want to globally refer to this. I take Stan's comment that we want to be sure there's no confusion with who conducted the survey, particularly, and this relates to a second concern expressed by Stan, particularly because this is a preliminary survey, not all the results are statistically significant, there are differences between the questions, and at least Stan has some concerns about how good the surveys are in general. So we probably should come to terms with how we want to name it. As I'm looking at switching topics for a second, as I'm looking at this, Jean-Baptiste, the version I sent around had accepted some comments but also had some comments still in red line. And here I'm not actually seeing any red lines, so this doesn't quite look right either. Is it just a technical problem with exporting?
Let me look into again the document you sent me, but this is strange. This is the one I used yesterday to create the PDF. Let me have a look again. I'm really sorry about that.
Okay. That's okay. I think if you put it in the show markup version and track changes, it will show some changes. There were some changes I accepted. It won't show those, but there were certain changes that I left because those were discussion points. So it would be better to have a version that still retains some of the track changes, which I believe is what I sent around yesterday.
Hi, Laureen, this is Brian. Can I jump in while we're figuring things out?
Sure, yeah. Do you want to talk about the statistical significance point?
Well, we can, and also just I sent around a style guide, fairly brief, that should give some sort of help on this issue, just how to reference them. And, yes, that will sort of prompt people to refer to the Nielsen surveys as Nielsen surveys, but the references indicate that it was for ICANN. So it's fairly apparent. On the statistical significance thing, we've had a bit of back and forth between you, me, and Stan, as
mm-hmm.
you've seen. It's really just a matter of wordsmithing. I don't think it's, you know, a huge thing. It's sort of up to you how you want the prose to flow. If you want to report every statistically significant finding or not.
No.
Okay. Right. So, you know, we've been playing around with some footnotes that I sent around yesterday to our little group so we can kind of look at them.
Right, right. And I'll come up, and I'm still pondering that. So I just raised it as an issue that the review team should be aware of, and in the next version that goes around after this call, I'll include footnote language, which basically recognizes that we realize that not all the results reported in these surveys by Nielsen are statistically significant, but that we still believe this is useful, albeit, you know, early innings information. But we want
right.
to have a footnote that reflects that we realize that, yes, not all the results reported have statistical significance.
Right. I think that's all you need. You don't want the readers to focus on that and maybe harp on that and any critiques, but at the same time, you want them to be aware. So I think we've got a good working sort of set of language. So thanks.
Got it. And Brian, just for my refreshing my recollection, when did you send around the style guide? Was that recently, or was that something that just
It was within the last week. I think last week I did it, but I'm happy to send it around again.
Okay, just so just so I know. Okay.
Sure, I'll do that.
And Watto, I see your hand is up.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello. I always have to make sure that you can hear me. I just wanted to maybe add my comment to what you said about the terminology. I think it's very important to be to have standard terminology throughout the document. For example, when we're talking about the surveys, I think I would support just calling them Nielsen surveys. I think there's a page I've seen where you called it global surveys. That's a bit of confusion introduced if we keep changing the title of the surveys. Then, in also in connection with the definitions in general, I think because what this report and the recommendations we're making are based on the Nielsen survey, I think it's very important to make reference to the Nielsen survey for any kind of definitions that we're coming up with. For example, in your report here on page 3, you talk of a kind of a definition of awareness and familiarity. You have introduced that. So I'm not sure whether that is, that's just one example. There are a few other examples I picked out. I don't know whether I can, yeah, there's another place where you're talking of highly known legacy GTLDs, and I think moderately known legacy GTLDs. Those two definitions also, I don't know whether they came from the Nielsen report or you are just introducing some new definitions. So maybe I can add that for now as we go along.
Sure, and you raised a point that Stan had echoed, and the terminology that I use.
Sorry, Lorraine. Can I add one more?
Absolutely.
Just before you continue, there's another important thing that I've seen here. Yeah, your report keeps referring to consumer end user, but in the Nielsen report, they talk of consumers. Just
yeah,
the consumers. There's
right.
Only one point in the Nielsen report that they talk about consumer end user, and that is when they're at the beginning when they're talking about the terms of reference that they've received from ICANN. So I thought that if we now start introducing this terminology of consumer end users throughout your report, a little bit of small confusion there. I would have suggested we just talk about consumers. Even the report itself was a consumer survey. So maybe also you can think about that.
Right. I appreciate that, Wado. In one of our earlier plenary calls, and this is also discussed in the footnotes to the Consumer Trust Report in footnote 1 and 2, we wanted to avoid confusion in terminology because the review team defines consumer to include both end users and registrants, but the Nielsen surveys divide those two groups. So for clarification, we wanted to differentiate our use of the word consumer so that we could distinguish between consumer end users, which is what the Nielsen consumer surveys are surveying, consumer end users, and registrants. And that's why we added footnote 1 and footnote 2. And you'll see that footnote 2 says to avoid confusion between the CCTRT's definition of consumer and the narrower segment of Internet users surveyed in ICANN's global consumer surveys, we refer to the latter group as consumer end users. So that's the confusion we were trying to avoid, which I'm hoping the explanatory footnotes help clarify. Does that help, Wado?
It helps to a little bit of an extent. My only worry was whatever report we're giving at this time is based on the Nielsen. Okay. So it would have been good if we adopt whatever definitions are there or whatever references are there. From the Nielsen survey, but if there was an idea, maybe a conference call that I missed, maybe which made another decision to come up with a different definition, then I think I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. I don't have strong views about this. I just recognize the potential for confusion because essentially the review team defines consumer one way and the Nielsen surveys treat consumer differently. So we have to figure out, in my view, we need to do something to make sure that we are explicit in how we're referring to these terms. So I'm not wed to this terminology, but in an earlier phone call, this is how we had resolved it. If people still think it's confusing, then, you know, we should try and hash that out. But either way, I think we need to account for the different ways the review team defines consumer and the Nielsen surveys treat consumers in their consumer survey. So maybe folks can look at this with the explanatory footnotes and consider whether this is sufficiently clear or not. And if people still think there's a lack of clarity, we can revisit it. Unless anyone has other comments. Jordan, I see your hand is up.
Yep. Thanks, Lorraine. I was just going to mention Jordan Buchanan for the record. One complication we face here, I mean, you've highlighted the issue, which is that the review team defines consumer one way and Nielsen defines it another way, which is, you know, creates this potential for confusion. And unfortunately, I don't think we have the option of changing our definition of consumer because we're supposed to look at issues of consumer choice and consumer trust, and we necessarily want to include both registrants and end users in that definition. Yeah. Otherwise, we would miss a part of our analysis. So we sort of have to stick with our definition. Nielsen's already done their survey, so we're stuck with their definition and what they called their report as well. So there's this inherent potential for some confusion. So it may be that what we want to do, unfortunately, is, you know, elevate the footnote to actual text in the language or something like that to sort of break out what we're doing and why we're calling what we're doing as like a one-time statement, and then just, you know, I probably wouldn't use the phrase consumer end user. I would just say end user just to avoid the repetition of consumer and maybe confuse people.
Yeah, but doesn't match the survey, though, and that's the one thing that I wanted to make sure there absolutely wasn't confusion on which survey we're referring to, because the Nielsen survey it's not titled end user. It doesn't really refer to end user. I felt we do need to keep tied to the way Nielsen itself titles it in some way.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But I do think that's maybe somewhere some of the confusion is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we may just want to think a little bit harder about how we, you know, if there's another way we can work on terminology going forward, such that, you know, we could lay it out at the start and say, here's how we're going to talk about it, and then someone who jumps sort of midway into it would see language that was maybe less confusing.
Well, elevating the footnote to the text, maybe that's probably a good suggestion, just to make sure it's clear. And maybe talking about it, perhaps maybe referencing it in some sort of introductory place, like either the executive summary or some place where we talk about terminology in the beginning and how we're going to treat things. Maybe we need to do it in both places.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
Okay. Aliza, I see your hand is up.
Thanks, Maureen. This is Aliza. I just wanted to make a point, which I also put in the chat, that Nielsen didn't exclude registrants from the survey. So they didn't inquire as to whether the respondents were registrants. So they may very well exist within that population. In fact, they likely do. But that wasn't the purpose of their consumer survey, consumer in their sense of the world. So I don't think it's necessarily very different from the way that you look at it. But I defer to you all for how you want to make sure that it's clear to the reader.
That's a fair point, except that for registrants, we do know that there was a very specific way they screened to make sure they were talking to folks who, were defined as registrants under Nielsen's own qualifications.
Right. I mean, they're also still end users. I think Jordan just made the same point.
Right.
All registrants are most likely also end users. I mean, hard to imagine one would be exclusive of the other.
Well, I'll continue to tinker with this and elevate an explanation in the text. I think the most logical thing is to make sure that we can reference, how Nielsen directed its consumer survey. So they directed its consumer survey, we see on page 2, global internet users who spend more than 5 hours, and registrant as the primary decision makers. So I don't think we're misleading anyone in terms of saying it excludes this, it doesn't exclude that. So anyway, I will elevate this explanatory text. This explanatory text in the footnotes to the body of the paper and see if that clears things up a little, or at the very least does not create confusion, and we can see how that works for when I pass it around next. But for now, what I'd like to focus on is the recommendations, which I revised in light of our plenary discussion call. Wado, I never got back to the point you raised about terminology, so let me loop back to that now. And Stan raised similar points. The Nielsen survey does not define terms very much. Sometimes they'll give examples in the questions. And in response to Stan's comments, I've added explanatory text in the footnotes about how certain questions were asked. But they don't really define terms explicitly. So if they didn't define the term, I typically am not defining the term unless it's sort of a common sense thing. For example, I think for familiarity, we have some awareness is the most basic knowledge. Familiarity can be considered a higher level of awareness. That's more, in my view, logical concepts that we're laying out as a foundation for the discussion. But for a lot of the Nielsen survey questions, when they use specific terms, they don't necessarily define it. So if they haven't defined it, I typically am not trying to say, and this is how we defined it. So to me, that perhaps points to a problem with the Nielsen surveys, for future review teams thinking about how surveys should be done, if terms need to be defined. I'm not an expert on creating surveys, but there many times there is not a definition for me to refer back to in the Nielsen survey. So that I just wanted to address your question. I think it's a good question, but I can't put in a definition if the survey itself doesn't have it. Okay, so Moving on to the recommendations, which, as I said, were revised in light of the plenary call where we discussed this paper. If people can scroll down to page 15, I think everyone has independent scrolling. So the first recommendation is, given the findings about the relationship between trust and familiarity and the reasons why the public visits websites, we recommend that ICANN conduct a study to identify why users visit certain GTLDs more than others, what factors matter most to users in determining which GTLDs to visit, and which new GTLDs have been visited most and least often by users, and the reasons for the high and low visitation rates. Such a study could provide guidance for future applicants in their selection of new GTLDs. We recommend conducting such a study as soon as possible so that ICANN can release preliminary results of such a study to inform the public and potential applicants in any future rounds. We think that such a study would be helpful but not required before future rounds. And then the recommendation is put in the recommended format. So that's sort of the narrative version. And that was the direct response to our plenary call discussion, I think Jamie was one of the commenters who I was responding to here, that there was a concern.
Hello.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Hello.
I'm hearing hellos, but I'm wondering if someone's sound is cutting out. Okay, so going on, then this was a concern that we didn't want to dictate GTLD choice, but by saying the second round, for example, could only be GTLDs that were most likely to be visited. But there was a recognition that some information for future applicants might be helpful to give them guidance about which GTLDs were more appealing to the public. So that's where this recommendation flows from, and that's a result of our prior discussion. And the findings, which are reflected in Nielsen, is that trust and familiarity are the most significant factors in why the public visits websites associated with GTLDs. Okay, so that said, I'm happy to take questions and comments on that recommendation. And Wado, I see your hand is up. I'm not sure if that's an old hand or you're wanting to speak now. I'm on recommendation one.
Yeah, I want to speak now. Yes.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Yeah, I was trying to understand the recommendation a little bit more. You can hear?
Yes.
Huh? Yes, I just wanted to understand this recommendation a little bit more so that I can maybe make up my mind how I feel about it. Just think that this study comes up with certain types of TLD names or that kind of thing to which can be presented to potential applicants? Or what do you mean when you say that such a study should provide that?
Now I'm finding it hard
to select their new GTLDs. So that okay, I wanted to understand, you'd like to come up with like a list of potential TLD names, or what's the exact?
Okay, so you're cutting in and out.
How can you debate on this recommendation? I'm not quite sure. And then the other thing. Okay, maybe ask a question. I'll type the question, eh? You can continue with other questions. I'll type this one.
Okay, but what I heard you say, yes. But what I heard you say, Watto, is that you want a little more information on how this would play out. And I also heard you give an example about whether this would come up with a list of GTLDs. And I don't see the recommendation as coming up with a list of GTLDs for applicants. I see this study as trying to identify the reasons why the public visits certain GTLDs more than others and what factors matter most, so that we could provide guidance for future applicants. Because right now we have these somewhat concepts that are a little bit amorphous, trust and familiarity. But my sense is if a study could identify with more precision and clarity why the public visits certain GTLDs more than others and what factors matter most, and also identify which current new GTLDs have been visited most and least, and perhaps reasons for that applicants would have more guidance and facts they could rely on when they are choosing new GTLDs for the second round. That's the thinking here.
Hello?
I can hear you now. It's just
hello, Lorraine.
I can hear you in the beginning, though sometimes in the middle of what you're saying, it cuts out.
Okay. Yeah, my worry is that this kind of stuff. Okay, I'll type out my question, and then you can continue with other questions while like.
Okay, Watto. Yes, I think typing would be better because you start out, I'm able to hear you starting out, but then you cut out. So besides Watto, who is typing, and we'll get to that question as it's typed, other concerns or suggestions for further clarity? My intent here is to take the findings regarding these factors about why the public visits GTLDs and provide some useful information for potential applicants during subsequent rounds. Jordan.
Thanks, Lorraine. So on the one hand, I like this recommendation as it's currently formulated. On the other, I wonder a little bit about what the actual implementation would look like and if it's likely we're going to get anything more useful than we have in the past. So, for example, Lorraine, maybe it would be helpful for us to distinguish between what we expect from this future study from what we got out of the Nielsen end-user or consumer end-user study. Because many of the questions in that survey, I think we're designed to get at this question as well, sort of like why do you choose particular sites? I think with the questions we asked questions about whether they'd be more comfortable, you know, performing certain activities and so on. And obviously that only selected a subset of possible TLDs, but given how many TLDs there are, it seems like it would be unwieldy to have a survey with a lot more choices than were available. So I don't know if you have in mind specific differences that you would imagine for such a survey, but to the extent that we can identify differences, I think it would be helpful to include in this text somewhere, just to make it clear that we're looking for something different from the surveys that have already been fielded.
That's a fair point, Jordan. And candidly, it's tough for me to get my it's tough for me to come up with specific ways for the survey to be done differently. Yet I believe that there are experts in this area. I mean, people who are selling things are really expert at conducting research about what things matter most. People who are deciding what goes into McDonald's French fries have a real keen understanding about how much salt and how much fat needs to be there to make them the most delectable. And I think that if the right experts are consulted, they can figure out a way to gather more useful information for guidance. I don't have the expertise to offer suggestions here, but my observation is that this survey is not specific or precise enough to be as valuable as we would hope for future applicants. And that's sort of the recognition that I think that's driving this. We have this sort of vague glimmer of what's important to the public, trust and familiarity, but it doesn't reach the level of specificity that I think would be most useful.
Yes, it's Laurie and Jordan again. I think, you know, we don't need to get overly rigorous, I guess, in terms of talking about it. I think the extent, maybe it's just the specificity that we talk about. Somehow it would be useful to distinguish this from the existing consumer survey just so that it feels actually, you know, we obviously have a lot of context in our group and we understand that this is different from the consumer survey. I just don't want to end up in a situation where future readers of the report or the people trying to implement this sort of end up saying, huh, but it seems like this is already done, or, you know, do they just want wave three of the consumer survey or something like that? So to the extent we can say sort of more specific or more granular or more focused on individual TLDs, whatever it is, I think that will be helpful. And then I guess secondly, I would say, ICANN is obviously not a marketing-based organization.
Right.
You know, they don't sell French fries. And so somehow it seems like what you would want to do would, you know, be and, you know, this will run into a separate set of problems potentially, but get people from industry involved in the creation of the survey as opposed to, you know, ICANN just sort of going out and fielding something, which is likely to be sort of less useful for those people who were trying to steer the data towards. So I think that might be another comment that we want to include in terms of approach going forward.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks, Jordan. And Jamie, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, thanks. And just picking up on a little bit of what Jordan just said and my original comment, I mean, it does put ICANN in a weird position, or could put ICANN in a bit of a weird position to have to conduct marketing surveys. One that flies in the face of the new bylaws, or could fly in the face of the new bylaws, which, you know, keep ICANN out of content. Secondly, is inconsistent with, or could be viewed as inconsistent with the GNSO policy, keeping ICANN out of beauty contest type role in suggesting what might be helpful or what might not be helpful. Or originally, actually selecting TLDs to delegate, as it was as was the case in the initial rounds. So I guess on balance, I don't see the revision as terribly harmful. I think it's a little confusing. There is the risk that and then to Jordan's point, I'm not sure ICANN will do a really good job at understanding what drives consumers to different TLDs. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. My intent here, which it sounds like I haven't quite met, at least in your view, was to try and avoid creating any conflict with bylaws and getting ICANN involved in content, but at the same time try and provide more useful information for new GTLD applicants in the next round, particularly because this relates to other parts of our review team findings and papers, particularly in the application and evaluation papers, reflecting that applicants perhaps suffered from a lack of the most useful type of information and support when they were entering this program in the first place. So I see these as, as related. How can ICANN as an organization that is opening up a second round provide the most useful information to applicants? So I'm open to suggestions. In fact, I welcome your suggestions on how to build on the findings in the Nielsen survey about why the public visits websites associated with GTLDs into a useful recommendation. So now I hear it's a silence. Right, I see Jordan in the comments section says I don't read this comment as having anything to do with content, which I agree with. I mean, Jamie, I'm still hearing your concerns, but I viewed this recommendation as seeking information to provide to the public as they decide what GTLDs they want to apply for, not defining it in any way, not screening it or limiting it in any way, but just saying, here's information about what seems to be important to people when they're deciding what GTLDs to visit, and having that as another source of information for new GTLD applicants. Okay, so I see Jordan and Wado saying that they're going to see if they can suggest revisions. And Jamie, if there's specific things that you can point to that raise your concerns about content, I'm happy to take a look at that. But I was actually trying to respond very specifically to your first comment, Jamie, and trying to avoid that pitfall. Okay, Carlton, let me go back to your question. My concern with the actual let me just scroll up. Concern with the actual written word underscores. Okay, Jordan. point. Okay, Carlton, I'm not sure. Jordan made a number of points, so I'm not sure which point you're referring to. I see you're typing, so I'm gonna wait and see which one. Starting with we recommend. Oh, I'm sorry, Carlton. I'm still not. I'm still not understanding your question, Carlton. I'm so sorry. If the information is useful for potential, okay. If the information is useful for potential applicants, why not do it before the next round? And there, Carlton, I'm concerned about timing. I'm concerned about holding up a second round for a study that might take a lot of time to put together and then implement. But again, this is just a first stab. If the review team thinks that this should be prerequisite to the second round, then that's something we can recommend. Okay, and I'm seeing comments in the chat. If applicants know this is coming, they can elect to wait for more data before applying. I agree with the timing concerns. Okay, if it's a nicer to have, let's not make it the first one on the list. All fair points. Okay, so I am going to look for, because I'm mindful of the time, I'm going to look for some suggestions for tweaks for the first recommendation, and let's move on to the second recommendation. Folks can communicate to me with their suggestions via email. Please don't do it in the Google Doc. Do it in either a Word document, or you can just send me something in an email. Okay, so for the second recommendation, this relates to expectations about registration restrictions. And here I'm on page, I've scrolled down to page 17. Given the findings on the public's expectations about registration restrictions and the findings that such restrictions contribute to consumer trust, the subsequent PDP working group should consider how to create incentives to meet user expectations regarding the relationship of the content of a GTLD to its name, and restrictions on who can register domains in certain GTLDs based upon implied messages of trust conveyed by their name, particularly in sensitive or regulated industries, and C, the safety and security of sensitive information, especially health and financial information. And then the recommendation is put in the form, and in turn, this is directed to the subsequent procedures, PDP. It's a recommendation. It's not a It's not a mandate, but there is a recommendation that it be completed prior to subsequent rounds because these are incentives that could be implemented as part of the recommendation process. So questions, comments, concerns. Jamie, I know you had sent me a comment, which I'll certainly let you speak to, but I think which characterized a concern about binding the subsequent PDP working group to doing this. My sense is, and people can jump in if I'm wrong, but that these are our recommendations. I don't believe that the PDP working group is obligated to accept our recommendations. I think they probably have some latitude there, but maybe Jonathan can speak to that if I'm misunderstanding the relationship here. And then I also see that Calvin has his hand up.
I'm sorry, Lorene. What was your question again about the latitude?
So we're going to be making a series of recommendations, but my sense is that the PDP working group isn't obligated to just accept all our recommendations, that there's some process they go through.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think that technically we're making our recommendations to the board, and the board is under no obligation to accept the recommendations. But are likely to be generous in their desire to do so. I think that the two in our template has more to do with who the implementer of the recommendation would be as opposed to who the, I don't know what the right word is, who the decision maker would be about whether or not to implement it. I think the board is in fact the decision maker on all of our recommendations, and that what we're putting in our two field actually has to do with, who will then who's the target implementer. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, well, that's helpful. So I know that your hand was up before Jamie's, Calvin, but I would like Jamie to speak first because I referenced his concern, and then we'll move to you, Calvin. So, Jamie.
Sure. My concern in reading it was that it notwithstanding that the board ultimately decides and then staff implements and it also gets taken up by the subsequent PDP, is that it read to me anyway is a little bit more prescriptive than the data would support. But the data on a lot of these things, including what's at issue here, is still fairly preliminary, and so what I tried to do was soften some of the language to look at these issues, but allow more latitude, particularly with respect to creating incentives. You know, the .bank applicants did not need incentives from ICANN to come up with their own safeguards. So there may be other ways for ICANN to encourage applicants to do things to engender more trust in their website. So in other parts of the Nielsen study, where there is data suggesting, for example, that trust in the DNS has gone up, we've decided not to look at that as significant because it's preliminary and because we're so new into this.
similarly, I don't think the data here necessarily supports the sort of the prescriptive language that I read. Hope that makes sense.
No, it does. It does make sense. Other views on that? just to make sure that so what I read your change as I read it was made it very general, a recommendation to explore creating incentives to ensure that public expectations are met, to explore how to best encourage registries to meet public expectations. And it seemed to me that somewhere, if my draft recommendation is too specific, in your view, perhaps yours is all the way on the other end of the spectrum, because it doesn't draw on any of the specific findings that the surveys contained about public expectations. So I'm thinking maybe there's something a little more in the middle that might balance this out. But other comments?
Okay, Kelvin here. Yeah, I similar concerns to Jamie's, I guess. And, you know, I had a feeling that we're beginning to being prescriptive. You know, maybe we need to look for a little bit more of a middle ground. My brain's trying to rack through the trying to go through all the highlighted changes and things like that, and it becomes quite difficult, you know, working on the thing to try and get something slightly less prescriptive. But I just thought I'd mention that I have those concerns about it. We're almost forcing ICANN into getting content rules going, and I have doubts or concerns going that way.
Okay, so a backup to Jamie's concerns, and I'm also reading Carlton's comment, which goes in the other direction, that he believes the PICS and the registrar agreement already create incentives, and that clarity regarding enforcement is a key concept. And of course, there is a finding in the Nielsen Consumer Survey, and I think the Registrant Survey as well, that the public does not only believe registration restrictions lead to an increase in trustworthiness, but that the public also believes that these restrictions are enforced. And I'm looking at Wado's typed comment. We recommend ICANN to work with stakeholders, industry, and professional groupings, as well as authorities, to formulate framework guidelines to ensure that restricted GTLDs conform to restriction requirements. A periodic survey of restricted GTLDs should be undertaken to ascertain levels of compliance with registration restrictions. Such restriction requirements must be firmly embedded in registration agreements. So, and that, I think, echoes Carlton's comment that this should be more enforcement-oriented. So Carlton and Watto are making related points about figuring out how to ensure that registration restrictions are enforced. Other comments and concerns? I still see hands up from Calvin and Jamie. I'm not sure if those are old hands or not. Okay, the hands are down.
It was an old hand, Calvin, here.
Okay. So to sum up, I hear a concern about being too prescriptive in our recommendation here, and I will go back and reformulate this to make sure we're not going further than the survey findings themselves indicate. And also what I also hear emerging is perhaps a third recommendation that is more enforcement-oriented. How do we ensure that public expectations about the enforcement of restrictions are met? Okay, and now I see Kylie, your hand is up. Kylie.
Yeah. Thank you, Lorraine. Hello, you hear me?
Yes,
okay.
I do.
Yeah. I think some time ago we agreed that the large-scale parking of registered domain names do harm the trust of the consumers and users. And I just wonder whether we want to include some recommendation for future studies at that respect, in relation to the harm of consumer trust because of the large-scale parking.
Thank you, Kylie. I don't remember that there was actually agreement on that point. It certainly wasn't something that was referenced in the Nielsen surveys. I think you had pointed us to some academic papers that pointed out a relationship perhaps between parking and domain name abuse, and I'm wondering if the DNS abuse study may highlight some more data on that point. And maybe Drew can speak to that, but I don't think there was consensus, to my recollection, Kylie, on the point that parking leads to abuses, and without consensus, and also with hard data, I don't know that we can make a recommendation at this point in time.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so any other questions or comments? Okay, then I am going to turn the mic over to Drew to talk about the public interest commitments. I will tweet this again and also then send around another version. And what I would encourage people to do when they're reading it is put it in a final, look at it in final form when you're looking at the document and review changes in Word. You can look at it in markup or final. Put it in final for your viewing because it'll be much easier to read that way. and then you can go back and look at it to see in the track changes form to see how it's been changed. But just in terms of readability, put it in final form so you can really get the flow. So thanks everyone for comments. And Drew, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Thanks, Laureen. So to Laureen's last point, I have not put this paper in a final mode, so it will look, you'll see all the edits, or at least most of them, with what's displayed right now. So since we last spoke about this paper, I've gone through and I've updated it for almost every comment I've received. There's a few where I have to go back and actually find some good sources. So, for example, it was pointed out by a couple of people, one of the recommendations was to define many of these terms. And so for those, I need to go and actually find some good definitions and put those in. Yeah, actually, I guess maybe there's more of that in my other paper I've been working on, the DNS abuse, now I think about it. But for this one, I've gone back through, and one of the things you'll note that I've fixed after speaking with ICANN staff is the adoption rate of the voluntary picks, if you go and you look at that section. So the previous numbers I had was due to a misinterpretation of the charts that I was looking at, and so now I have that fixed. So just keep that in mind as we go through these recommendations in case that changes anything for any of you in your feedback. We're basically, after speaking with ICANN staff, it's my understanding now that anything put into the applications as a voluntary public interest commitment was, in fact, incorporated into the registry agreement, that there are not, in fact, deltas, which I was previously thinking there were, between them. And that was, like I said, just based on misinterpreting the chart data. So you'll see that. Otherwise, this hasn't largely changed. It's just been editing to make most things more clear and add some footnotes, and except for the very bottom where I have, of course, updated the recommendations based on our last conversation and the feedback I've gotten since then. Oh, and real quick before we go into recommendations, if anyone has a good source about the history of Specification 12, that would be really helpful for me. excuse me, because let's see if I can find it on here. But I want to give an intro to that. People have told me to do that, and I think that's a great recommendation. Here, so the implementation of PICS, I need to give a nod to Specification 12, since that's sort of another form of voluntary commitments, even though they're not called PICS, and instead are called community registration policies. So that's just an aside, because I will be looking for that, and if anyone has good institutional knowledge of that, then please shoot me an email. All right, now for the recommendations, as they've been updated, I've only received feedback so far from Jamie, and he commented in the document, but I'll go over these and then would love to hear everyone's feedback. So the first one is the recommendation that ICANN staff should improve accessibility to voluntary public interest commitments by maintaining a publicly accessible database of these commitments as extracted from the registry agreements. The rationale for this is that the current process of analyzing voluntary PICs, comparing PICs amongst TLDs, and understanding their impact is currently cumbersome for end users and the community. Unlike many other aspects of registry agreements, voluntary PICs vary greatly from one TLD to another. Therefore, a publicly accessible database of these commitments would enhance visibility and accountability. And so this is addressed to ICANN as an organization. And we are recommending that this must be completed prior to subsequent rounds and that it should apply to the current and any new voluntary picks that come up. So that way people could have greater literacy with what exists now for voluntary picks prior to the new round as voluntary picks are being created. So does anybody have any feedback on that? That is based off of a recommendation before that was much more vague, and this is a much more specific version of that recommendation based on the feedback from our last discussion on this. I don't see any hands. Do we have consensus on this? Or let me say it this way. Does anybody oppose this? If you oppose it, just type in the chat or do a red little voting icon. All right, so Jordan wants to take a lead. Jordan will have back by today. Anybody else? Okay, seeing no hands, move on to the next one. The next recommendation is that future GTLD applicants should state the goals of each of their voluntary picks. So now this is that the intended purpose is not discernible for many voluntary picks, making it difficult to evaluate effectiveness. And this is directed to the subsequent procedures PDP working group. And we are saying that, yes, this must apply. This must be implemented prior to subsequent rounds, but it would apply, of course, to future applicants, not the past applicants. And this goes especially to points raised by Carlton and then some of the feedback to those points as we were trying to come up with some ideas on how we could measure things better. And so it still leaves things up to the applicant. It does not impose any sort of restrictions on them. But if an applicant is stating that they're, you know, going to undertake some practice, it's good to know the goal there. And if anything, you know, something else that could come out of that is if there are goals and then there are these public interest commitments, that might actually be a good way to see different solutions for accomplishing goals just down the road in the future. So that might be a positive externality of this. And so does anybody have any feedback about that one?
Hello. Hello, Drew?
Yes. Hey, Wado. I see your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah. The applications, the previous round, how did the applicant react to this recommendation? Are there any that gave the goals or none?
How did the applicants, the applicants react to this?
Yeah, in the previous application round, are there any applicants that gave the goals or there was none whatsoever? They just gave the picks without any goals.
So they were not required
none?
To give the goals, and I have not seen any other than – well, or that's not true that I haven't seen any. I guess there's some language in the picks sometimes that will say something about in an effort to do X, we are doing this. So it's there in a few of the ones I've seen, and I'd have to pull up the spreadsheet to see the exact language to give you. But an example I'm recalling off the top of my head is something about in an effort to protect the rights of brand holders or something like that, and they'd state what they were doing with regard to some sort of program to, you know, a trademark program to verify domain names against trademarks. But it is not, it's definitely not the norm. It was only in a few that I saw. And like I said, it wasn't separated. It was just if it happened to be incorporated into the exact language. But that's a great question.
Okay, my second question is, don't you think that if we adopt this recommendation, it will the meaning of the word voluntary in the PICs, if we are now going to require that they include certain things, how does that relate to the voluntary?
Well, I mean, the PICs are voluntary, so they don't have to do it at all. It's just if they are going to do it, they just need to, this is helping the community understand what they're attempting to accomplish with it. So the goal is to clear up ambiguity.
Okay.
And so I see several benefits to this. So one would be, of course, just the ability of the community to measure whether or not this voluntary PIC is accomplishing its stated purpose, because these PICs become enforceable once they are incorporated into the agreement. And then also that would even give, if there was a dispute, that would help both the registry as well as someone filing a complaint in terms of settling the dispute about a PIC. So maybe a voluntary PIC in practice has some other effects, but its primary goal was, let's say the primary goal was to stop brand infringement, trademark infringement, and as one of the consequences of that, it stopped, I don't know, someone from being able to register a domain name. Well, then at least if there was a stated goal tied to the voluntary PIC, when there was a dispute, then it could be seen that the goal was trademark centered, and it wasn't to discriminate against, X type of registrants. Conversely, and then another benefit I see is that it, I think, would take out the risk of people creating kind of arbitrary, vague picks, because then they have to define things. And then, like I mentioned before, I think it could be a good way where if you see a lot of common goals amongst different registry operators, but you see different voluntary picks to accomplish those goals, it might be a good way to see best practices and also to gauge which registries are doing a better job in accomplishing a goal than others. And of course it would be, up to the community to measure that. But this goes to Carlton's point that he's made several times, that when we look at the current PICs, there really isn't a good way to measure whether they're accomplishing what they're supposed to accomplish, whether they're good, whether they're bad. There isn't a lot out there. And, as Jamie, and I see, Jamie, I see your hand, so I'll call you next. As Jamie's brought up in the past too, conversely, we don't want to be imposing a bunch of restrictions on registry operators to the point that they wouldn't want to create voluntary commitments. And so this is instead just kind of helping provide more data for the community to evaluate the registries. And so I'm going to call on Jamie next, but Wado, if you want, just raise your hand again after that and then call on you again. All right, Jamie.
Thanks, Drew. I think you've summarized already my concern. I put it with the last one, but it also applies to, or the next one, but it also applies to this one. I mean, as you said, these are voluntary picks, and there are different reasons why applicants suggested them or committed to them, and the more onerous a process, that's created for applicants to voluntarily commit to doing or not doing certain things, it just seems as a matter of logic, the less likely that they will actually sign up for something voluntarily, only to be scrutinized and have to, potentially get raked over the coals later about it. I know that's obviously not the intention. One thing I would point out is that there is already a forum for review of voluntary picks, and that's when the applications go into public comment. To the extent an applicant includes voluntary picks in their application, people in the community can comment on whether they serve a public interest goal or would potentially undermine the public interest, and that can be taken into account during the application review process, as opposed to, you know, setting up a formal review under which the voluntary pick has to go through as much scrutiny as you know, other parts of their application. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. Real quick to clarify, it sounds like most of that was directed to recommendation number 3 then, and you're okay with recommendation number 2?
Well, I think recommendation number 2 creates the same creates some of the same issue. I put it in number 3, but
I definitely want to discuss number 3 and discuss your feedback on that in a moment.
But
just
two,
specific to number 2, what are your thoughts on how we could improve that recommendation as it's worded now?
There's a difference between a requirement that they provide a rationale and encouraging them to provide a rationale and pointing out that, you know, that this could be the subject of public comment and public comment review, as opposed to saying if you're going to, you know, making it a, you know, question, you know, 18A or whatever, that if you're going to submit a public a voluntary pick, that you must also include a rationale for that pick.
And so you think a rationale itself is too onerous a burden?
I think the risk, I think, so maybe for some, maybe not for others, I think my basic point is the same for 2 and for 3, which is the more requirements you hang on the submission of voluntary picks, the less likely you're going to get voluntary picks.
I completely understand that critique. I just see something as simple as stating a goal as not being much of a burden, because you're already writing up what the requirement is, and so there has to be some rationale that someone needs to mute their mic. Carlos, I think we can hear you. Can't believe all the terrible things you said about Jamie, Carlos. All right. All right. Carlos, mute your other one. You have 2 things. Okay. Okay.
I'm on the Jamie. Thank you.
So Jamie, just getting to that. So this is one that, see, I don't find this too onerous in stating the goal. But, I mean, I certainly understand what you're saying about we don't want to, you know, add things to the point that it deters people from coming up with voluntary picks. So this is just an additional line to fill out to say the goal for, you know, the pick. I mean, that's a way of self-categorization to a degree, too, with the data. So you could figure out all the, you know, after the fact, oh, this registry does such and such as part of their anti-abuse program, or this as part of their rights protection mechanisms. And also I see it as a bit of an easy way to safeguard the public interest in the extent that if someone comes up with something that in effect, leads to discrimination against entire groups of people or could lead to, censorship in some way, you could at least then go back and see if there was and there was a dispute about it, you could at least go back and see if there was a legitimate goal or if in fact, you know, the whole thing was kind of a farce to allow for such discrimination and whatnot. So if the, majority of the group accepts this recommendation as it's worded, would you oppose it or what are your thoughts? still there, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that question was directed to me. No, I'm not going to fall on my sword over this. I think it's unintended consequences. I hear what you're saying, that it should be fairly simple to put in a goal, but I worry that it's not that a potential applicant is going to see this as an additional part of their application that's going to be scrutinized, and worry that they're not going to state their rationale or correctly, and so may say, to hell with it, I'm not going to submit a voluntary pick. But no, if people are comfortable with this, then I'm absolutely not going to submit a minority statement over it.
Okay, thank you. Laureen, I saw your hand.
Yeah, actually, I think between your comments and Carlton's and Megan's in the chat, the views have been expressed. I would just reinforce the fact that if someone's going to go to the trouble of having a voluntary pick, it doesn't seem overly onerous to ask them to be explicit about what goal they're trying to meet.
Okay, thank you. I agree. Okay, so then is there anyone who opposes this recommendation as it's worded?
Hey, Drew, it's Jordan. I just put in the chat, what I'm going to try to do is just pull some other registry colleagues to see if, to sort of help out better understand Jamie's concern. I think if it seems like registries really would react to this by being less likely to submit voluntary picks, then I would share Jamie's concern and maybe would be opposed. But my instinct is that this doesn't seem problematic, but I want to flesh that out with some actual discussions.
For style purposes, would we refer to this as a Buchanan survey in the report?
Definitely.
Okay. All right, that sounds good, Jordan. All right, so as of now, we're going to go ahead and keep this, assume that it does enjoy support, and then if anyone, such as Jordan speaking with colleagues, if anyone else decides later that they think it could be improved or that they actually oppose it and want to articulate that, then just reach out, email all of us as a group. And so WADA will hold two and wait for Jordan's talk. Okay, sounds good. So Jordan, then, definitely just get back to all of us either way and say, hey, after speaking with colleagues, it sounds like it'd be fine or it wouldn't be because of this. Just so that way we have that feedback. Okay, great. Thank you, Jordan. Okay, so then moving on to the third recommendation. And this is one where, I think Jamie's points about creating an onerous process, really resonate with me for sure, where I want to definitely discuss this with the group and think this through. So the recommendation I have here listed, and this is based on our past conversations and whatnot, but this is the first time that this recommendation has been articulated, is that the PDP working group should explore whether to create a mechanism to vet voluntary public interest commitments to ensure that they do not run counter to the public interest. The rationale is that at present there's no mechanism in place to ensure that voluntary public interest commitments do not negatively impact the public interest prior to going into effect. Therefore, the PDP working group should explore whether the safeguard should exist at the application stage to ensure that voluntary picks are vetted against at least some criteria. And this is directed to, like I said, the subsequent procedures PDP working group and the future CCTRT. And so let me first explain the rationale, and then I will articulate Jamie's points, and then we can see what we want to do with this, if we want to keep it, not keep it, or improve it in any way. But the rationale here is that, so if we look at the last round of voluntary public interest commitments, they were done in a very, very short time frame. And so therefore they, for better or worse, are not, I do not believe, the fullest example as to what people, what applicants could really do through that mechanism. So in a future round, you can hypothetically have lots of people that create public interest, voluntary public interest commitments. They call them voluntary public interest commitments, and yet what they're really trying to do is ensure that, you know, if a trade association, for example, is applying for a domain name, maybe they're really trying to ensure that competitors can't engage in their own marketplace, or maybe some group comes up with a voluntary public interest commitment that they will, you know, only allow certain registrants that meet certain backgrounds to register the domain name, and it looks like they're just trying to root out abuse, but in reality they're creating a zone for censorship. There could be all sorts of things that you could get that would not run, that would not be for the public interest, but that would fit into this category because there are no criteria for this category. And therefore, you know, you could potentially have things that run counter to the public interest. So that's the rationale for why perhaps a future group such as the working group and their next review team should look into whether there should be criteria. So I'm not at all having us propose the criteria or propose the mechanism by which they would be reviewed on the, but just to see if they would pass some sort of, you know, rational test there. On the flip side, to Jamie's point, and to a point that Jamie just brought up but is not articulated in his comments here, so there's already a public comment period, and so that could potentially root out anything that was particularly onerous or bad. And then also, if we suggest this to the PDP working group or to a future CCT review team, and then they do come up with some sort of mechanism, well, that mechanism of review might be too onerous to the point that it completely kills voluntary picks. And then here's something where, you know, applicants are right now encouraged, hey, come up with some great thing that, you know, you can do to have an even better zone. And then we've essentially, unfortunately, killed it by, even though we would have good intentions, but by recommending this. And so that, I think, is a strong argument against this recommendation, for sure. So I'd love to get more feedback on this. And it might be that, because, you know, I mean, part of the problem with looking at the existing voluntary picks is that they were created in such a short window, and they're very hard to analyze in a comparative fashion right now. And we've only been able to do that thanks to all the hard work from ICANN staff in helping us organize it. So the other two, I think, really address that and will make voluntary picks better in the future. And then this one, you know, perhaps it's too early to come up with some sort of preventative mechanism like this. Perhaps the pick strip process alone, you know, might be able to help with this. I'm not sure. So I'd love to get some feedback on this. And so first Jamie and then Jordan after.
Sorry, I was having trouble getting off mute. I have nothing to add to what you said. You fairly represented what my concerns were. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. Yeah, I think they're really well-articulated concerns. Okay, so Jordan?
Thanks, Drew. I think it's important to just take a quick step back and contextualize where the picks came from for a moment. I think, Drew, you're probably already aware of this, but for those on the call who have been following a little less closely, the voluntary picks were introduced midstream in the program largely so that applicants could react to early warning advice from governments where it was thought that, you know, you might need to make some change to how you were dealing with certain matters in order to avoid government lodging an objection. against your application, presumably on public interest grounds. I'll also note that there are other types of objection processes in the application process, notably community objections and limited public interest objections that are designed to sort of make sure that along with the GAC's role in providing objections to individual applications, they're designed to make sure that there is a public interest voice or set of considerations in the process. It's very hard for me to imagine some sort of ICANN-driven panel being good at evaluating whether or not an individual pick is in the public interest or not. And especially, it's hard to imagine doing a better job than the existing mechanisms that have already been formulated. So I think the important thing here, rather than trying to have a special review of the picks, is just to make sure that the picks are submitted in a time frame in which both the GAC reaction as well as both limited public interest and community objections can be lodged in response to the entirety of the application, including the picks. I think if that's done, if the picks are actually problematic, then you can use these other mechanisms to object to the application, including the picks, and make sure that there's an opportunity to avoid applications that are not in the public interest, whether it be through picks or otherwise.
Thanks, Jordan. I think that's a great counterproposal. So do you have some language you could even type in the chat right now that we could use to articulate that? So basically the recommendation as I see it would be that we'd still have a similar rationale, but the recommendation, instead of telling a future working group or review team to look into creating some sort of mechanism, we will kind of create our own mechanism by way of just saying we recommend that voluntary picks are submitted at the time of the at the time that the application is submitted for public comment, or by the time the application is submitted for public comment, and that the community has a, you know, no fewer than 30 days or something to weigh in on them. And then the rationale would still be very similar with, you know, I can modify it, take out the second sentence, and I can also correct it. Instead of it saying there's no mechanism in place, I would say the rationale is that we want to ensure that the current mechanism in place for evaluating applications applies to public interest commitments too going forward, you know, with enough time, blah, blah, blah. All right, and I'm going to look at the chat right now to make sure I'm incorporating everyone's comments. Okay. And then, Jamie, is that a new hand?
No, that's old.
Okay. Okay, so Jordan's proposed language, for anyone who is not in front of their computer, is all picks should be submitted during the application process such that there is sufficient opportunity for GAC review as well as prior to the deadlines for community and LPO objections. So we can definitely tweak that, make it more nuanced, but I think in general, I support replacing the existing recommendation 3 with something to that extent that emphasizes that the rationale behind this is that we want the community to ensure, and all members of the community, of course, to ensure that we're getting public interest commitments that are truly in the public interest, but also not creating some sort of institutionalized review mechanism that, you know, existing outside of the current ones. We're just making sure that future picks are presented to the community with enough time. And like I said, the more recent picks, and as Jordan pointed out, it was kind of a special process because they were done in response to GACRA early warnings. At the end of the day, the applicants had fewer than 30 days to even put them together. So, you know, there wasn't a normal process the last time around. And so we're trying to emphasize that there should be a normal one going forward and that people are able to weigh in. And I like Wado's suggestion. He heard Jordan give a good background in history of voluntary picks. Maybe that can suffice. So we do already have a background in history of voluntary picks in the paper. It's specification 12. I need someone to help point me in the right direction of just some sources on for that, which is different than the specification 11 voluntary picks. But to Wado's point, Jordan, if you want to take a look, another look at the backgrounds in the current paper explaining voluntary picks and how they came to be, if you have anything to add to that, please do that as you're catching up from your vacation. Okay, so Megan agrees with Jordan's proposed text. All right, so does everybody, is there anybody who opposes omitting recommendation 3 as it is now and instead replacing it with this general recommendation about voluntary picks being submitted in time for feedback from GAC and the rest of the community? All right, then by the power vested in me, it is now officially the new recommendation. Never shout a gavel. So then I will go ahead and, I guess, use Jordan's language, put that in the Google Doc, and then start tweaking it. And then, Jordan, please jump in and tweak it too, and also look at the voluntary pick background info in there, and then everyone else please weigh in too. And so that is it from me, and so we can move on to Megan.
I think it's actually Jonathan for application and evaluation process.
Oh, okay. So, oh yes, Jonathan. Sorry. I didn't realize we had four.
Sure.
So
I mean, we're running a little bit, a little bit late on time. I'm wondering, Megan, do you have stuff structured in a way that's easy to talk about? Because the changes I made to mine were relatively minor based on the recommendations made on the call. So it would be a second round for mine. Megan, if you're ready, I'd be happy to hand the talking stick to you and just circulate this draft to folks to make sure that they're in line with the revised recommendations. But like I said, they were just touch-ups based on the call last week.
Okay. I'm fine to go ahead. And by the way, Jordan, I was referring to the distinction objections, but there's a whole other story that I'm happy to go on. Who's putting the document on the screen? Pamela. Ooh, it's awfully small. So this, I think we've looked at this before, and what I did was update it to put recommendations in the order that you've all asked for. So there was no real evidence of any benefits or of confusion, and I used end user. So I'm completely lost by these definitions of what an end user is and a consumer and a resident. Someone, and it can be staff, I don't care who, can put whatever you like, you call it whoever you like, but just like clear and consistent with everything else that's been used in the rest of the text. But the point is that there was no evidence from any of the information we had or any of the data that we collected or was made available to us about whether or not, that's not the right document. We're supposed to be talking about benefits versus confusion to end users. That document was foreseen for another day, the one that you've put on effective resolutions. You've indicated in your agenda that that's for a different day. So the document I'm talking about is called Benefits versus Confusion to End Users, which is what I was asked to talk about today. Oh, now the plus sign is working. Good. Okay. So this is the one I was talking about. And again, I used end users. And again, you'll have to just put whatever you like. I don't care what you call them. But please use the same consistent wording throughout. And I use that to be edited. And I looked at consumers specifically and compared with registrants. And that was based on the consumer and registrant surveys from Nielsen. So I use their terminology and use it in that context. So if that has to be changed, please, someone else do it. I just can't do any more adjustments. So you put in whatever the terminology is that's correct. But the bottom line is that there's no evidence whatsoever that either group, registrants or consumers, either were confused by the numbers of an increased numbers and names of the UCCLB program, or that there were any benefits aside from those that we've already seen, which were greater choice, availability in IDN, different languages, greater specificity of identification, etc. So that's a sort of short executive summary of what I looked at, and then I plunked the whole bump into this section on what happened to the recommendation. Yeah, there we are. The recommendation is that in the next consumer survey that's going to be carried out anyway, I presume, on a regular basis, since we're already at the second consumer survey, additional information could be asked about benefits of expanded number, availability, and specificity of new GTLDs. Because if you want to ask that question, or you want to answer that question, you need to ask it to the consumer. So that's the first point. And then it would be useful also in any future consumer survey to see if consumer choice was improved or benefited, and again, it has to be asked at the next survey, regarding geographic names, GTLD, specific sectors, or internationalized names. In other words, did consumer find those were particularly useful compared to the past, have they used them more than they were using before, etc. And that, again, has to be factored into the new survey. That would at least be, permit you to answer this question. Because for the moment, we can't answer it. And then the converse of that is whether confusion was created. Because, again, there was no data or way of determining whether confusion was created for consumers. I don't have any information that, unless someone knows about a study that's been done somewhere, about just the sheer number and quantity. And again, this I think relates to, possibly, to the fact that most people use search engines to navigate. So possibly this whole idea of confusion is offset. If there were possible and potential confusion, it would be offset by the mechanisms that they use for search. So that was the argument there. And it's the same really for registrants, because they also use search engines quite significantly in deciding where and how to purchase domains. And then there are three other aspects in the recommendations. One is that any future rounds should take into consideration possible preventive measures that would help limit or avoid consumer confusion. But again, that presumes that it exists, if it exists. And that's, again, only if it comes out of the following, of a future survey. And then it says, again, too, that the next CCT review would be able to assess in more detail these aspects, because by then there would be, first, a longer history of the use of the GTLDs and a much bigger marketplace, and also there should be more data available. And that would include also data on non-English script IDNs. And then one aspect that was identified in the ICANN GTLD Marketplace Health Index report was that it would be important to gather further data on services provided by registrars to registrants, particularly in relation to the geographic distribution of GTLDs and data on languages offered. I think we can probably just take that out, actually. I'm not sure that that's even necessary. I threw it in because it was something that I thought was useful in terms of consumer, what's the word, not manipulation, but access, consumer access, and trying to find where their way around domain names. But now that I look at it again, probably not particularly useful. So it could come out. You can put it in italics or square brackets and let anyone else think that that's useful. And then the rationale is just what I said orally, and again, what the reason for making the recommendations is because there was no data and very little evidence. And then, of course, it's addressed to the next CCT review and ICANN staff in terms of preparing the next CCT review and preparing to have sufficient information. It's not necessary to be done before any subsequent round is done. And then the consensus within the team is really up to you to decide whether this is useful and should be included, and if you agree on the recommendation. So I can't hear anything. I can't see any reactions.
Megan, it's Laureen.
Hi, Laureen.
Hey, Megan. Thanks for pulling this together, because this, I think, is a bit of a complicated topic. My sense from reading this is that we're really not in a position to say at this point whether there was confusion, because we haven't really gotten enough data on that point. So the recommendation is to gather data. And I'm just thinking that in some places the language may need to be clarified a little bit. For example, on the second page, it's a highlighted comment. It's a highlighted text. There's no evidence from the consumer survey that an increased number creates confusion. However, this specific question was not asked specifically. I'm just thinking we might state that more simply, in that we just don't know whether there was confusion, because when I see language that says there's no evidence, that makes me think that there was a determinant, you know, we looked at it and there was nothing to support that conclusion. Although you acknowledge that the specific question wasn't asked, I just think we need to be very clear and maybe even more simple with our statement that we just don't know, and make sure that the text is clear throughout your paper on that point. And then perhaps
yeah,
just
I'm happy to have you text, Laureen. Sorry to jump in, but I agree 100% with you. So if anyone wants to propose new and better text, please do. I'm more than happy to have a different word in there.
I'll send you a suggestion, Megan. And then the other suggestion is, I'm wondering if there, just for greater context, is my sense is the concern here, I'm wondering if we can give any specific examples or how people feel about that, but I'm sure the issue arose from the fact that there were either domain names that sounded similar to one another or were the same in English and another language, and I'm just wondering if some more examples might create more specific context for the concern that there might be confusion and the singular and plurals.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem that I have, that the GAC, for example, and of course for me too, just as a plain old citizen, excluding any GAC relationship, said that single and plural versions of the same GTLD would likely cause consumer confusion. And of course, if I look at web and web, for me too, it looks confusing. It's like, how do you know which one is which? On the other hand, and this is an important aspect, I think, and it's certainly looked at in a different section on string objections and dispute resolution, but there's no evidence that it actually did confuse consumers. We don't have any evidence from the consumer survey because the question wasn't asked.
Right.
But I wonder if using the search engines, and this is quite speculative, of course, but I presume those of you who are experts in this know much better than I do, that using search engines would allow you to avoid potential confusion. So it's really very difficult. I'm almost tempted to just take this whole section out and not even talk about it, quite frankly. But I leave that entirely to all the rest of you.
Well, just to chime in on your last point, I think the recommendation about getting more data in this area is an excellent one, because as you emphasized throughout, we just don't know, and so for that reason alone, I certainly would suggest not eliminating this. Perhaps it could be streamlined.
Okay. But I just have a proposal, and I know I've made this before. I think all of this, everything we're doing, really needs some good editing, and it all needs to be brought into a common package. And I know that what we're doing now is just a draft, and we'll have public comments, etc. But I think somewhere we're missing someone to bring it all together and have a good overview, and making sure that the terminology is correct and what's repeated here is not repeated somewhere else, etc. So I think that's really what we need. Yeah, Jonathan, I've seen your comment, and you said that before, and I'm happy to get substance right, but and I'm happy to streamline, but I quite frankly, I think it's better if third party looks at it. Or a second party, or to do the
same. No, for sure, Megan. And just so people know, there's actually a firm that ICANN outsources to that will go through all of this and make sure that all the headings and the formatting is correct and is consistent throughout, and it all looks like a single document. And staff will do a pass through this on voice and things like that. We just need to make sure that we're all on the same page on recommendations and not leave staff to try and interpret people's comments and things and get consensus on sort of the specifics of what matters to us, right? Is I think the key. But they will do a pass on this and turn it into something coherent.
Okay. So I need some clear idea of what to do with it. Lorene rightly says that it should be streamlined. People seem to agree with the recommendations. I propose to take out the last one, or the fourth one, wherever it is that I, where did I put it? About, where it's, this one, the very last recommendation I'll take out. But I must say, I've looked at these damn things so many times. I can't streamline. I'm happy to streamline, but I can't anymore. I've looked at them so many times, I can't see where to streamline. So if someone with a good eye and a good pen is ready to cut, I'm delighted if you cut.
Megan, I'll come back to you with some suggestions. I feel your pain with looking at the same thing so many times. I know how hard that is because I'm living it myself.
You're doing a better job.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's hard for me to feel that way, having looked at the same thing so many times myself.
Okay, I really appreciate that because I think it really needs an objective eye to look at these things. That's what I mean. It needs someone who can really sort of pick out what needs to stay and what needs to be cut. And then I'm happy to let it stay. I mean, to look at your, accept your objective, reasonable, and sensible amendment.
Okay, I'll make suggestions and I will send it to you and then you can decide, Megan, what you want to accept, reject, and then recirculate it as you see fit.
Thank you so much, Lorene. You're wonderful. Okay, so that's the end of that. So the recommendations, we didn't get any comments on. So I'm presuming that everyone agrees. Or everyone's dropped off. Oh, it's gone beyond the time. Maybe that's the problem. Everyone's dropped off.
Oh, no, you still have a full complement here, Megan.
Oh, do I?
Okay, got quite a few people.
Okay, then I'm presuming silence means consent. So, Lorene, if you can have a quick look with your wonderful, objective, and critical eye, that will be a lot of help, and then we'll have a final version of this.
I will turn that around to you, and Megan.
Okay, who's running the show? Jonathan?
Yeah. Nominally, I think it's me. But at this point, I think we got to go let people go and see people again tomorrow. As far as the document, I made everyone's edits to the text and then took notes from the call and updated the recommendations. So presumably Jean-Baptiste can circulate a link to the document in its current form, and people can take a look and let me know if I didn't capture their objection correctly. But I went through and tried to implement everybody's recommendations from the last call. So it could be we don't need to go through this process again with it, unless somebody raises something in particular. All right? So thanks, everyone, and see you on the call tomorrow.
Thanks, everyone.